Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. If we haven't met before, my name is Monica Burns. I'm a former New York City public school teacher, and I've been out of the classroom for a few years, leading professional development for teachers and writing about all things EdTech on my blog, classtechtips.com. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes and resources from today's episode. And if you're listening to this episode on a podcast player like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, you should see a link in the description that you can click on as you listen today, and it will take you to all the resources I mentioned. This episode is sponsored by Microsoft Education, and I'm so excited to partner with them this summer. Have you seen all of the new updates in Microsoft Teams? I love the new Reflect for Assignments that lets students share how they are feeling and think about their emotions. This is just one of the dozens of updates to Microsoft Teams. Head to aka.ms/teamspp to find out more about Microsoft Teams and all of the new updates. You can also send me a DM on Instagram while you're listening to this episode, and I'll send you the link. This week's podcast is titled, How to Make Sure Your Next Project is Authentic with Kristen Harrington. It was so much fun chatting with Kristen about this topic, and you'll hear me mention her new book in this episode too. If you've thought about revisiting long-term projects this year, or if you support teachers introducing technology into student projects, this episode is for you. Let's dive into the conversation. Well, welcome to the podcast today, Kristen. I am so excited to have you on. Before we jump into talking all about how you can make or a teacher can make their next student project authentic, I'd love to hear just a little bit about your role in education. What does your day-to-day look like?
Well, I like to always joke with teachers and other people that I have the fun job in teaching. Basically, I get to do the projects, the tech, the fun tech things. Like, I'm the one that the kids are like, it's the fun tech lady when they see me in the hallway. So I feel really lucky and just getting to connect with teachers a lot. So day to day, it could vary. And I love that. I like flexibility. I'm not a routine person as much. I'm getting better, but it's just not my strength. So it actually works for me to have, like, some days I'm training all day. I may be training teachers, staff members, and then, or I might be modeling lessons or collaborating with teachers on lessons, coaching, a variety of things. For the past year, I've transitioned back to the school level, and I get to do, like, media as well, which has been amazing. And I run the student news show at my school. It's an elementary school, or K-6 actually. And I love that. It's just cool to see how empowered they become. And before, I was around students a lot, but they didn't really know my name. They were just like the tech lady. And now to have them know my name again and have, like, my own kids again, it's been amazing. So, and getting to still do the coaching part, it's probably like the ideal job that I have now. I'm very lucky.
Oh, well, I love that story because it just reminds me so much of, you know, I've been out of the classroom for a few years now, but I do some of that pushing in schools. And there's one school in particular that I was there for a couple years. And anytime I walked into a classroom, I was like, the iPad lady's here, you know, because they were a bunch of one with iPads. So it's just so funny to think about, right, how kids just get excited and respond to things. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I was just so pumped to talk to you about student projects today. And before we, you know, dive into this big topic of authentic student learning experiences, I'd love to hear just a bit from you about, you know, what did student projects look like when you first started teaching, you know, and what type of projects do you see students creating now?
I love this question. So I was very fortunate to begin my career at a private school, and it wasn't your typical, like, college prep. It was a, I don't want to say alternative school because that always sounds like strange, but it wasn't. It was an amazing school, and project-based learning was one of their main, like, tenets or principles that they felt strongly about. So I think that's where my background started and transitioning to public school. I always really pushed for that. One major difference, though, was the lack of technology. Mm-hmm. So not having that was challenging. We didn't have a lot in that school. We certainly didn't have iPads for every student. So that's a big change. And then even during my internship, I remember that there were 3 computers in that classroom, and they were primarily used for accelerated reader. Like It's the same thing as like Scholastic Reading Counts or any of those programs where they just take a test after reading a book. And then I started creating little like scavenger hunts, different things like that. But literally 3 students at a time could go on and use it, or they could maybe partner up. And then transitioning to now, where kids can pretty much run the world at school with the technology they have and what they're able to do during projects. And then even just the being able to connect globally with others is a huge difference. So it's just like skyrocketed projects, the use of technology in the classroom. So that, I think that's the main difference.
Yeah, I definitely have seen some of the same things. And I had an AR computer in the corner of my classroom as an elementary school teacher for the same reasons, for kids to get on and just kind of, you know, show off what they've learned after they read a book. But it wasn't something where we were doing a lot of creating or making of things. And
and
when we think about that type of creation, you know, one of the things that I know comes up a lot is, you know, this idea of authenticity and what can really make a learning experience authentic. So, you know, let's unpack that term authentic together. What does make a learning experience authentic?
To me, and part of this is based on research and different sites like PBL Works, which was formerly Buck Institute of Education. Part of it is just my own made up philosophy. And I would say, first and foremost, some level of choice the students have. It doesn't mean they choose the project or the topic, but some level of choice and some level of relevance to the students, I think, is really important. Another thing is a public product. I think there needs to be a purpose beyond a grade for the students. So it needs to be something that they're going to publicly see with a public authentic audience, like someone that would normally be an audience. So for example, if they're creating an ABC book, their audience might be kindergartners. If they're creating like policies for the cafeteria, it may be the cafeteria staff. That's their audience, but like an authentic audience. And then that pretty much covers it. I think basically, like, overall, it would just be something that mimics a real world task. Like something that would happen in the real world is what they're doing in school, versus just these canned things that's a worksheet where it's like, create a habitat, but they're not really creating the habitat. It's just on paper, which is great. I mean, I've done that too. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but that's still not as far onto authentic scale as it could be.
Yeah. And you know, what you said there about the public product, right? Like, who's going to see this, setting that why or intention, you know, I think is so huge. And, you know, I really love what you mentioned about choice. You know, it might not be a free-for-all, right? Sometimes we think of choice as just being like, go do whatever, right? Like, no, there's that guided aspect to it. So just like you mentioned, it might be, you know, choosing the type of product or the type of tool or who's going to see, right? There's aspects that you can still, you know, give students some choice while there's direction, you know, and intentionality, you know, with it. And, you know, I had a chance to take a peek at your new book for ISTE entitled Adventures in Authentic Learning, 21 Step-by-Step Projects from an EdTech Coach. And I love that. I love the title. I love the adventure kind of theme of things. And, you know, I'm wondering, what steps do teachers need to take before they dive into a new project?
That's a great question. And that's probably the biggest hurdle, is teachers not knowing where to start. So the first chapter of my book actually focuses a lot on developing a project mindset. And that starts with the teacher and then transitions to the student. And to me, and I didn't have this at first either. So that's why I feel like I'm a good person to talk about it. I share some stories in the book that do not paint me in the best light. They're very funny, however. But I think when you start out, you see these projects on Pinterest and they look so perfect and everything ends up great. And it's just like a recipe, you know, when you try it and it doesn't work. But what we have to remember is it's about the learning and what learning took place, and then what learning did students retain even, because that is what's important. If it could be a complete flop, like you could do a complete lab and it doesn't work at all. Everything they thought was going to happen didn't. But like, did they learn the content better with that than with worksheets or textbooks or videos? They probably did. So focusing on like a successful project doesn't mean that it even gets finished sometimes, because I've had some that don't. So that's a big thing. I think planning is really important as well. So trying to combine as many standards into the project, you know, without it being overwhelming, like they need to fit in a seamless way. But then when projects take more time than you anticipated, which they will almost every time, you're kind of prepared for that. And you can say, you know, it's okay, because look at all of the things that they're learning and reviewing in this one project. And then after that, it would be setting up for the environment and the students. That's the next step, which would be having materials easily accessible to students, even if it's a catalog that they can look through and say, hey, we need glue sticks, or we need glue dots, or we need a 3D printer for this. Like, they need to have that choice and be able to come up with their own ideas. And then also just creating that culture where students feel comfortable sharing, where they appreciate differences in others and know that those differences are what help make the project stronger. All of those things need to happen before the project, even like even day one of the project. I think those are the things that need to happen.
Yeah, that planning piece, right? We think about lesson planning, or maybe gathering examples, or creating the checklist, or revisiting a rubric, right? Those are all things that might happen. But I like that project mindset concept, or that idea, because I do think some of it is just that taking a deep breath and wrapping your head around, you know, what this is going to look like, helping anticipate different things, being mindful of how you might need to shift or make changes, or how... Yeah. You know, as much as we're working towards an end goal or product, right? And there's probably a celebration that goes along with it. The process is really where all the meaty things happen. And, you know, I think that idea of a project mindset, I really like that, especially for just getting people comfortable with something that maybe they've done a little bit, or they're just looking to scale up, or, you know, are totally new to them. And I know that there are ed tech coaches, right, or digital learning specialists who listen into the podcast who might not work directly with students, but even talking to teachers about that project mindset, I think is a really just useful concept to consider. So appreciate you, you know, you sharing that piece. And, you know, we're thinking technology too today, right? The ed tech component. And you mentioned, you know, some of the big differences between projects that we first did with students. Now, you know, moving into a place where we might have more access to technology. I sometimes joke when talking to groups about how, you know, I used to do a systems of the body project where I would have to go beg the art teacher for the big rolly paper. So one of the kids trades one of the other kids, right? We've probably all been there, or at least seen them hanging up in the hallway, right? And how you can do all different things now that would layer on top of that experience, right? So, you know, let's talk about some tools. I use that term open-ended creation tool to talk about tools that are a blank canvas, really great for projects. But what are some of your favorite ed tech tools for students?
Well, and you just jogged my memory on something. Like, one of the most important things that you said was that you layer it. So we don't necessarily get rid of that. Like, kids still like hands-on. Mm-hmm. They like drawing on paper. They like post-it notes. They're obsessed with post-it notes, things like that. So those don't necessarily go away because we have the technology, but it enhances it. So anything that has like video cameras, annotation tools, things that they can still use those hands-on materials, but then now they can share and discuss their thinking more and tell what they know. So it's easy for teachers to say, oh, they have mastered that, even though on a multiple choice test, they aren't really showing that. They can tell me and explain, or they have not mastered it. They have some misconceptions about this content, but either of those are really important. So some of those are important. And also just tools that allow students to share and collaborate or tell their story are big. So some of my favorites, I love Padlet. Jamboard I've been using more though, because those are very similar. Mm-hmm. Google Jamboard. So that's basically just like a virtual bulletin board that students can share photos. They can organize content, like a graphic organizer, like a digital graphic organizer. I mean, there's really a lot. Flipgrid is like one of the favorites from everyone, where there's just so many things that they can tell their story. They can share videos. They can collaborate across the world with other classes or guest speakers using that video tool. If you haven't seen it, I would say it's like Brady Bunch, where you just see little tiles of everyone and you can play their videos in those tiles. And then I think my very most favorite is Apple Clips, just because the kids love it so much. And that is a step above like iMovie. If you haven't used it, it's obviously you have to have Apple iPads to use it, or an iPhone. But I love Clips because it's just fun. I mean, there's like Star Wars stickers you can layer on a video. Like, you can't not love that. Anything Disney, that they love. And so they can create professional style videos, I think, that look professional using Apple Clips really easily and really quickly. So that's just for telling their story or sharing what they know, tutorial videos. I think Clips is probably right now my most favorite tool. And it probably has been for the last about 3 years, I would say.
Clips is just so great. And I think it doesn't get as much love because so many people are in Chromebook environments, right?
That's true. Yes. But
I really think it's just very powerful. Even if you only, you're at school or maybe you have access to a handful of tablets, right? Or
yes,
handful of iPads. I think it's worth looking at even for a small group of students because, you know, Apple Clips has the captioning piece built in, which I think is so important.
Yes.
It's so easy to share things. And it just is a fairly intuitive platform for movie making, right? If kids are comfortable on Flipgrid, I think they would have no trouble with Apple Clips. And then maybe if Definitely. One of your students, you're working with an older group, you know, they might try out Adobe Rush or they might try out iMovie, right? Or maybe even Final Cut Pro, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of scaling that you can do. And I think Apple Clips is such a great, great recommendation. So, you know, if we talked about the project mindset, right, being a good thing for educators to think about when they're designing a project, and if we're looking at something that's maybe more tech rich, like kind of getting ready to use technology, what do you recommend to teachers getting started with a tech rich project for the first time?
Definitely, like the most important thing I would say is that they need to practice with the tool in a low academic risk. Mm-hmm. I heard that somewhere. I don't know who said that, but I like that term, like low academic risk environment. So if that means like an all about me, so that's why having technology day one is really important. All of you tech people out there that probably aren't listening to this, but you should be, it is essential to have the technology day one, because that then you can start practicing and learning the tool and learning the programs and the tools you're going to be using in that low academic risk with the getting to know you type activities. It increases cognitive load whenever you're learning something new. So if you're learning new content and a new tech tool at the same time, that's going to overwhelm anyone, teachers, students, anyone in the world. So giving them that chance that like the goal is to learn the tool and also kind of get to know each other, but there's no grade, there's no, like I said, no high risk involved, and also not learning content at the same time, I think is really important. That would be the biggest thing. And just know that it takes practice. That, what we talked about at the beginning, student choice, where they're choosing tools, that doesn't happen until they've learned it for a while. I mean, my nephews are obsessed with Legos, like most kids in that first, fourth or fifth or even adult age group. They, you know, it starts out where they put the kits together exactly the way the kit says. And now they've transitioned to modifying and then creating their own designs. But it starts with that practice first. So it starts with the template style projects or activities. And then later they can go, oh, we could use Apple Clips for this. Oh, we could use Padlet for this or Empatico for this. So it really has to start with, you know, the step-by-step type activities and projects first. And again, like I said, trying to reduce that cognitive load as much as possible.
Yeah. And I like that term that you share, the low academic risk. I usually say low stakes, right? Kind of the same,
idea, right?
I like yours with that academic risk thing. So I think that really,
I didn't make that up and I have no idea where I got it from, unfortunately. So whoever I stole that from, I apologize.
No, that's perfect. And you know, you mentioned All About Me projects, right? So if someone wants to introduce a tool, like they might choose the tool for the big project and use it in that lower, you know, stakes or low academic risk environment. I know just yesterday I was talking to a group of educators in New York and we were looking at interest surveys to kick off the year. So some back to school prep. And one of the things I said to them, you know, as much as we might use Google Forms or Microsoft Forms, right? If you know you're going to use Flipgrid all year long, like here's a way to just bring in that easier prompt, right? Or that I can talk about myself prompt. So such a great tip for someone who might be building their own tech confidence, or for someone listening who wants to support someone who maybe is hesitant. I think that's a really great place for them to start. So, you know, Kristen, I mentioned your book, Adventures in Authentic Learning from ISTE, but would love to hear a little bit more about your work. Can you tell us a little bit about the book or anything else that you're working on before we finish up today?
Yes. I like to joke that I mean, like I said, since I started in private school, like the authentic learning and project-based learning has been just like my thing, even more than the technology. I don't know what else I'd write a book about. This is pretty much it. I mean, maybe instructional design or something, but for the right now, this is it. So it's like everything from culminating from my last, from like my teaching experience to my coaching and getting to like come in and collaborate and like steal ideas from teachers and see what works and what doesn't, all went into that book. So it's mostly my own ideas, a lot of it, or taking ideas to another level. Mm-hmm. And then there are actual lesson plans in there with every template you could need. Most of them are able to be modified easily by the coaches or the teachers that use it. There's also sections specifically for coaches to help teachers like adopt that project mindset and begin with project-based learning or transition to another level of project-based learning and authentic learning. So it was an amazing experience to write it. I had a lot of help from ISTE. Their editors are amazing. Mm-hmm. I was very humbled through that process. And yeah, and so you can actually purchase it on the Amazon store or ISTE. And I believe they're working on getting it in fall. I don't know if I was allowed to say that as well. So for all you media specialist librarians out there, you might be able to order it through Fall at Destiny soon.
Wonderful.
Or through Tidal Wave, I believe it's called. Yes.
And I'll put a link to your book. So if anyone's listening to this episode on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, you can click on the description link, just expand it for all the links so that you can learn more about the book and that you can follow Kristen on Twitter. So where can folks, I know I said Twitter, but where can listeners connect with you and learn more about your work?
Definitely Twitter or through email, which I can provide my email address for you as well. If you visit the ISTE website, I've written numerous articles for them. So if you search their blog or their Empowered Learner magazine, I have several on each, so that on various topics, but a lot is on the authentic learning and the ISTE standards and how they incorporate with authentic learning. I also present frequently at conferences. Mm-hmm. And my next conference coming up is the ISTE Creative Constructor Lab. So if you have not registered, it's coming up in October. I believe it's 15th through 17th. Mm-hmm. And that is my very favorite conference, that because of course online conferences are not the ideal for most of us. Mm-hmm. For me, it is not. I like face-to-face. But out of all of the ones I attended last year virtually, that was my favorite. So I'm really looking forward to it. There's amazing speakers there. I'm fortunate to even be accepted mm-hmm. among them because it's very targeted for creation. So if you're into creation and authentic learning, I recommend that conference. So I think that's probably the next one, unless something else comes up mm-hmm. in the meantime, which is crazy because all summer I've been presenting like every week. Mm-hmm. So to not have one until October feels like really crazy right now.
Absolutely. No, I know the feeling.
I know you understand. Sure. You do even more than I do.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen, for joining today. So many wonderful nuggets and gems for folks to dive into. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It was so much fun chatting with Kristen during this episode, and I want to make sure we finish up like we always do with tips for making this EdTech easy. First, try a low-stakes activity. Next, develop a project mindset. Then, give students a choice. Finally, connect to a real-world experience. Remember, you can find the show notes for this episode with all of the resources and tools mentioned today by heading to classtechtips.com/podcast and finding today's episode number 127. I've also put the link to the show notes directly where you're listening to this episode. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, if you're on Spotify or Google Podcasts, you'll see the link to the blog post or show notes page that goes along with this episode and has lots of information, including where to learn more about Kristen's work and her new book. A big thank you to our sponsor for this episode, Microsoft Education. I'm so excited to partner with them to bring you new episodes of the Easy EdTech podcast this summer. There are so many new updates to Microsoft Teams, and I don't want you to miss a thing. You can find posts on my blog all about the updates, or head straight to their landing page to learn more. Just go to aka.ms/teamspp.
If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or another favorite app, don't forget to hit the follow button. When you follow along with the podcast, each new episode will download for you automatically so you don't miss a thing. And if you have a moment and are feeling extra helpful today, please leave a rating or review for the podcast. It helps other educators find this podcast when they are searching for topics like EdTech in their podcast app. Have a great week and check back on Tuesday morning for next week's new episode.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech podcast wherever you're listening.